Welcome along to Playthrough Podcast.
Click three
Click,
times.
Chris.
Click.
Click, James. So this is episode number, Chris. What episode number is this?
50. What is it, Jim? 56?
56.
56. This is episode number 56. First time I've ever said an episode number, I think. We are still talking Brutal Legend, even though we are playing Yakuza right now. Yakuza Kiwami. Is that how it's called, Jim? Kiwami?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And as you can hear, dear listeners, Chris is here, Jim is here, but we are also joined by a special guest today, the man, the legend, Coop of the Spoken Metal Show. Say hello, Coop.
Good afternoon, good evening, good metal. My name's Coop and welcome. Hold on, this is Retro Asylum. Yeah, that's cool to say.
Yeah, almost. Playthrough podcast, really.
Yeah, playthrough.
Same kind of team, isn't it?
We were talking before we came on. We were talking about Retro Asylum, so I was all I meant to be a professional podcaster, and I've already failed.
Yeah,
they all merge in our minds.
This is what happens when you order a heavy metal Don from Wish. You get me, unfortunately.
Yeah. The Chinese knockoff version. Wonderful.
Heavy metal Don couldn't grow. Heavy metal Don couldn't grow a beard like that, mate. You're all right.
He can play better than me, though, so he wins.
He'll kill me.
Speaking of them, I've actually been listening to Andre the last couple of weeks while working. Lovely, lovely stuff if you're into your metal. So, yeah, I think
there's
it's
another
called...
another podcast you've got as well called Crumbling Ghost that's really good. Yeah, really good.
I haven't listened to that yet, actually. I need to get on that.
That's the one with the girl in the... She does the vocals, doesn't she, in that band?
Yeah. It's really interesting. Like, yeah, it's really interesting stuff. They played a show where someone, whilst they were playing, gave them a note, and when they opened the note, it said, "We think you're great, but can you turn down?"
Really?
Yeah. He tells the story. I had him as a guest on the show, naturally, and he told us quite a few funny stories about that. Like, yeah.
Blimey, he goes to a metal show and then asks for the music to be turned down.
I think it was one of the fans or one of the people in the audience said to them who were playing Crumbling Ghost, they gave him a note saying, "We think you're great, but turn down."
Blimey.
Yeah, well, nobody turned anything down when I was listening to Goat Semen and Massacre the other day. Yes. So that's how it's supposed to be. So I'm getting a lot of flack for going to a concert with Goat Semen. I'm not sure why. I mean, Chris is not having it in any way. He doesn't want anything to do with Goat Semen, it seems. But it's all good metal, mate.
That's what you say, mate. But, you know, if I say to my mother-in-law, "Do you want to listen to some Goat Semen?" She doesn't. She's not happy. it's got to pass the mother-in-law test.
Okay. She probably won't like it either. So that's fine. That's fine.
We've been workshopping new metal names on the Retro Asylum Discord this afternoon. Have you seen that?
I saw. Yeah, I saw.
So John Shep has come up with a new one. Famwang.
Great. Their first album was absolutely superb. I'm just waiting for their next release.
He actually used that term to criticize Blade Runner, the game, which is the current RA Game Club game. But we quickly said that would actually make a good name for a metal band. So there you go. Introducing
metal has snuck its way into the Discord channel. I love the way it's kind of snuck into the major Discord. It's like gone kind of like over the edge now, and it's like everybody could talk about it. We're cool. It's like
it's gone mainstream.
Yeah, it's mainstream. Yeah. John V, when he was talking about digging up his CDs and going back to his CDs, my heart sang. I thought that was great listening to that, you know.
Yeah.
John, I think John V listens to a bit of Barry Manilow, doesn't he? Which must be
no more metal. No more metal.
There's not a more metal than Barry Manilow.
You definitely need to get back into CDs. Right now is the best time ever. I'm picking up CDs for like 50p for great albums from the 90s or 80s or stuff like that. So I've got a collection of about 750 downstairs in my living room right now. So it's a good time to start collecting the CDs as well. Vinyl is crazy expensive. Yeah. I still buy that, but only for the stuff I really, really want.
There's some interesting parallels with video games and music as a medium, where like CDs, like you say, are really cheap as chips now. You can get them anywhere. And the retro gaming sort of thing had that a couple of years ago, where you could pick up PS1 games. And as it's moved on, it's like vinyl is almost like cartridges kind of are now. You know, people want to get... There's some interesting parallels with that you see. But especially like I was saying off pod here, that when you're collecting these things, you can see a lot of things are connected and a lot of, because it was cycles of technology each time, you know, it's interesting. Yeah.
And you know what they've both got in common as well? Cassettes. You know what they've all got in common? Cassettes still hasn't come back.
Oh, yeah. No. Metal have started to bring that. We'll do it. It looks like then the retro gaming community will get it maybe a couple of years with tapes. Because we're doing it. The metal community, it's a very cool thing to do is to release albums and stuff on tapes. Like, you have anything to play it on.
Well, I was only reading, and this is not very metal, but I was reading the Guardian website today, not metal at all, and they've got an article at the moment, actually, in their like culture section. They've got an article about like the rising price of cassettes, secondhand cassettes.
Yeah,
like they're rocketing in value. So, mate, it all comes round eventually, doesn't it?
It does.
So I actually collect cassettes as well whenever I find some, but they are hard to get by. They're still actually cheap when I find them, but it's very rare that I find any that are anything worth. So
I need to buy myself a really decent cassette player because I still
see that's expensive these days because you can't buy a new one that's decent in
it's
any
like
way,
a VHS
shape, or form.
Player.
Isn't that right, Coop? I don't think there are any new ones that are decent.
It's one of those things is that the medium's coming back, but the method to play them isn't, which is really strange. Yeah. You know, it's another parallel with retro video gaming is that there's not like a cassette mini come out, so it didn't happen. They're both kind of pulling away from each other. That release loads of cassettes, but you'll never be able to play them or anything. Which is just bizarre.
So I've got a few tape decks that I bought for cheap years ago, and now I'm repairing them myself. I mean, replacing the rubber bands and that's
what goes, isn't it? Yeah.
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 Oiling it a bit, and then they actually work quite fine. So I got lucky, but I really want a Nakamichi 505 or you know, the one that pops out and turns the cassette and goes in again. It's such a beauty.
That,
so at some point I need to get
one of my sort of Commodore games. I had I have an enormous Commodore sort of tape collection, and a couple of them would get demagnetized and things like that because they were, you know, it just kind of slowly, it just doesn't, they deteriorate really fast. It's hard to keep tapes kind of in any good condition. Yeah. It's almost impossible.
So see, that's where your analogy from before was very correct, because if vinyls are like cartridges, they are kind of indestructible if you just treat them right.
Yeah.
You can still listen to age-old records, very, very old records, but your tapes or your CDs will start to degrade very quickly. So that's more like
the
floppy disks.
You blow on a vinyl as well as a cartridge. There's a lot of power.
Yeah.
So
this episode is all about Brutal Legends music. But before we get into that, let's just hear what we've been up to. So let's start with a guest this time. Coop, what have you been up to the last couple of weeks that's like gaming or metal related?
I've been playing a little bit of catch-up. I'm a little bit behind on Demon's Souls. Everybody seems to be hammering that ahead of me. And enjoying it more than I am, by the way. It seems like that game is if there's two columns for everything that's great about it and everything I dislike about it, there's loads more in the dislike. But in the stuff that I like about it, the one thing, and that's beating bosses, is so big it puts off the others. So I keep going back to it. And it feels like banging my head against a brick wall, but I know it's good. I know it's great. And so I've been trying to get a little bit further in that. And then I've been on my Evercade, my XP, because I'm going to go away to Wales. So I'm making sure I've got everything I need to do some mobile gaming, if you will. And finally going to try and finish Ghouls and Ghosts on it, because it's a really nice...
Oh yeah,
and it's me talking about how hard Demon's Souls is, and I hate it. We can talk about that, the hardest game's ever made. But yeah, I really plan to finish on the finishing columns. There's, you know, Raushi's just running away with it, so I need to kind of get some finished games.
True.
Yeah, it's the way forward. So, they're the kind of gaming rated things. But I'm also knee deep now in Metal to the Masses, which is a huge event involving Bloodstock, where bands play. They play and win the chance to play a very big festival, metal festival. I am the compere for that, so I introduce bands and tell moderately funny jokes in between sets. And it's something, it's a lot of fun. It's a hell of a lot of fun. So, yeah, trying to keep the retro guy game inside of me happy and the old metal head happy. The two of them are constantly fighting. It's either buy a new guitar or buy a 3DO. What are we doing today? You know,
buy both.
Why not both?
Thanks, Chris. That's my wife.
You're welcome, mate. You're welcome.
Or Guitar Hero. Guitar Hero is like a combination.
Yeah, Guitar Hero, that's it. That's retro.
Yeah,
it must be by now.
Yeah, if you can find one that works.
Exactly that. Yeah, exactly.
So you released an episode yesterday about the Metal to the Masters, the second act, right?
That's right. Yeah. And as if you want any exclusives, the next gentleman I'll be interviewing is Brian Slagle, who you probably most won't know, but he is a guy based in the States, and he essentially signed Metallica. You know, so he's a huge guy. He's going to be the next guy on the show, which is really exciting to speak to someone that high up in the world that I'm involved in. You know,
nice.
Nice. So just peeling back the curtain a little bit, is it just yourself then that reaches out to all these people? And
It started as that, Jim. It started as like I was just interviewing people within the business, mainly crew and tour managers and people inside the business to kind of demystify some stuff and show kind of what really goes on. And after that happened, people started coming and approaching me. So, you know, there'd be someone go, and that was really, I didn't expect that. And that was really nice. And you'd get serious people approaching you, like I had Michael Hahn come on the show, and he writes for The Independent. He wrote a book about metal, and I sent a copy to Mads, and that's like a serious journalist. And suddenly he goes from telling funny and amusing stories to something a bit more interesting and a bit more kind of like heavyweight, you know? It's, it's fascinating. But yeah, quite often I get sent an enormous amount of music, electronic press kits and all that type of thing. It's almost endless because there's that much and that much music out there. I'm never sure to guest, but every so often you get a really nice message of someone, you know, you're like, wow, okay, great. You know, so I must be doing something okay.
It must be
slightly interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've loved a lot of your episodes. I like when you reach out to people who do like stuff you wouldn't even imagine could be done. Like the guy who was he from Afghanistan and he was playing metal there. And the stories he could tell, that was incredible.
Yeah, Yusuf and the band of Freet. And they,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it was like you think you have it bad in where you are, you know, you think, oh, there's not many gigs going on, you know.
Gigs in
that part of the world can get you killed. You know, it's insane. And that makes it like, you know, I started the podcast, there's a lot of jokes and funny things, but that's serious as it gets. But interesting stuff, fascinating.
Yeah.
I love that hobbies can make the world so much smaller, you know, like you probably don't have much in common with most Afghanistani people, you know, very different way of life there. But things like gaming or metal or sport or any whatever your hobby is, you know, if you find someone with a similar interest, no matter where they are in the world, guaranteed you've got things that will bring 100%. You together. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah. You can put Mario Kart on and everybody from Street Fighter 2 and everybody over the world they may not even speak the same language as you, but we all have our favorite character.
You've got common ground.
They bring us together. Music and video games have a lot in common with in terms of like being a bridge building with people. We all know whenever you start a new job or you meet a new group of people, I ask them, like, you know, what music are they into, but I'll also ask them what games they play as well, and that will give me a bit of a barometer of if they're my friend or not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whether it's someone you want to spend time talking to.
As metalheads, we're actually kind of sociable. We always wear our metal T-shirts so we can see each other when we are out there in the world, and that gives us something to talk about immediately. So you go up to people you haven't ever met before at a concert and talk to them.
Because you like goat semen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Talking about music from the entire world. Goat Semen was from Peru, and Massacre was from Colombia that I watched the other week, and that was beautiful, beautiful.
Mm. You got to be careful with your audience there, though, Mads. If you ask the wrong person whether they like goat semen, you might get a smack in the face.
True. I'll
it's
be
worth
careful
if
there.
You try and search for a lot of these bands online. It's a minefield.
Yeah. Yeah, not safe for work.
So I'm thinking we were off air when I told you that I always wear my metal T-shirts most of the time, and I'm working in a workplace where people have white shirts or blue shirts on and a nice blazer, and because they need to meet customers. So I have my metal shirts on when I meet customers as well. And sometimes I think to myself, maybe I should grow up. Maybe I should just put on a shirt and be more adult. But just the other day, I ran into the boss, the big boss of the company, the guy who owns the whole thing. And he saw my Motorhead t-shirt and immediately started talking Motorhead because out of the blue, it seems he was a great fan. I didn't know. So I'm definitely not going to take off my metal shirt. So
Good for you.
I only have two types of t-shirts. I have metal t-shirts and video gaming ones.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
And that's whichever day you catch me on, it will be one of the two, you know?
Mm. Yeah. It's all good. So, Jim, what have you been up to then?
I've been struggling with a bit of hay fever, which is probably the most unmetal of all the fevers. but other than that, no gigs or anything like that. But I have finished Minish Cap.
Oh, nice!
Yeah.
So, did you like it?
No, not well. I did. The last level outstayed its welcome a little bit, and the last boss can definitely do one. yeah, it's definitely not my favorite 2D Zelda, which I've had a little read of some of like the opinions and stuff like that, which I assume in the minority.
It's very popular.
Yeah, it is. But there we go.
Mm. Not for everyone.
It's not for everyone, though.
No arcade machine news.
Oh, do I go into that? So yeah. So
the arcade odyssey
it continues. when I put it all back together anyway, it's going to go up on UK VAC for sale.
So how long have you had this, Jim?
About a month?
Three weeks.
Three weeks.
You're turning into Steve Erickson, you know.
I know. I've got some air in my tablet with it. It works. So like, there's nothing wrong with it in terms of like, if you put it on, plug in that 60-in-1 and you don't move it, it's fine. It's
you don't move the sticks or press any buttons.
Or look at the screen.
And you look at it. Just look, don't touch. It's absolutely fine. No, honestly, if anyone's like going to buy it now,
don't touch it with a barge pole.
That UK VAC though, that group is a dangerous, dangerous place. I have it all. I look through it and see these wonderful bargains. They're in the States, some of these things as well.
Yeah,
and they put them in the wrong posts, and you're like, what? $600 for like an Outrun cabinet? And you're like, I'll get that. It's based in Detroit or somewhere. That's a dangerous place. That UK VAC, the amount of stuff I've seen on there, and I've had to quickly scroll past. Because the temptation is too big. It's a great site.
Don't worry, Kit will have bought it before you've even got a chance to click on it.
He doesn't collect, though. He's not a collector.
Kit doesn't collect computers, but he's got 400 of them.
Mm, yeah.
So I've potentially got another one on the way. This needs to go. I've got another one on the way, potentially. It looks a lot better condition, nice and clean.
So how does your back feel about that?
How does your back feel about that? It's dreading it. It took me days to get over bringing that upstairs. The other one is it's like a Chinese version of a Candy Cab. So instead of like the OK Babies and like the Astro Cities were just solid steel. This one's, I think, a bit more plastic. So it's,
okay. Yeah. I mean, my Astro City was heavy. I mean, heavy. I wouldn't be able to carry that upstairs in any way.
Nah. So I'll be roping in the brother-in-law again to get this thing downstairs into the garage, awaiting a purchase, a chaser. Mm. Yeah.
What does Mrs. Middleton make of it?
Oh, she's not happy, Chris. She is not happy about it.
She's no longer Mrs. Middleton. She's...
No, she is. It's not got that bad yet. But it's good. Yeah, we're not far off from it. Yeah, she is not happy.
So quickly moving along then, Chris, what have you been up to?
I've been pretty much more of the same from last week, mate. I've been still needing to finish some video games. I've got way too many on the go at the moment, but I'm very near the end of Demon's Souls. Come on, Coop. Chop.
You loved it though, didn't you, Chris?
I love it.
You fell in love with it completely, didn't you?
Yeah, I recognise its flaws. Like, it's definitely not... Like, there was... Mads, don't worry. I'm not going to spend ages talking about this. And then I probably will. No, I won't. I won't say too much, but I beat a boss last night, right? Which wasn't that difficult a boss. I won't say which one. But I beat a boss last night. Very pleased with myself. when you beat a boss, you get loads of souls, right? It feels like it's all very good. It kind of fires the old endorphins because it makes a really nice sound, and you get like all these souls rush in. You think brilliant. Like every other boss, so the first thing you do is you get to the where you get back to like the central bit, which is called the Nexus.
The Nexus, yeah,
because that's where you bank your souls. You can upgrade your character, etc., etc. But yeah. I thought I beat this boss pretty comfortably, and I thought, right, I'm gonna kind of, there's some treasure around, that's gonna go and loot this treasure now. I went over to loot this treasure and got absolutely murdered by these enemies that I thought had died when the boss died. Nope. These things are, you're in an area where it's a swamp, it's a sticky swamp, so you can't dodge, you can't run, you can barely walk. It's a sticky swamp, Jim, sticky white swamp, and you can't do any kind of your evasive maneuvers.
Or your rolls,
And when you die, you know the concept that you leave your bloodstain on the floor and you've got to get back to your bloodstain to recover your souls. I had about 50,000 souls at this point, which is a lot of souls at any point in the game. And I couldn't get back to the bloodstain because it was in this swamp. And every time I walked into the swamp, these little things were killing me. Yeah. I was absolutely fuming. I reckon I died about 15 times trying to get back to this bloodstain, and in the end I died on the way to the bloodstain. So I've beaten a boss and I lost all of the reward for it,
and the option as well, when you do that souls thing, don't you, I was only reading after it'd been, I think I'd done two or three bosses in, you take the souls and you can unlock certain weaponry with I didn't realize that, so you've been, just got rid of them.
You've been eating them to get souls. I think one of the things that is is not great about it is the way you upgrade weapons, because you know I'm still using the same weapon as I was using right at the start of the game, and so now these souls have limited use, and I think that's what they kind of improved upon in Dark Souls. They made everything just a bit more meaningful in that sense. I use my souls now literally to upgrade my character. I don't really worry about getting new weapons. It's good enough. So I've got I think I've got two more bosses and then I'm in the end game. So it really is.
You get a new game plus it as well then? Yeah.
Don't think so. For a long time, I was thinking I probably would. I'm probably going to just move on, you know, and play something else. I mean, I've absolutely adored it. And as a primer for Dark Souls, man, I've loved it. A completely unforgettable gaming experience. One of the best I've had in years and years. But you know, like anything, I'm probably 60 hours into it now, and I'm starting to think, I'm still loving it, but also probably ready for it to finish. And move on. I've really enjoyed the start of Yakuza, so played the first couple of chapters of that, and that's been, you know, completely different vibe and different style again to Demon Souls. So that's cool to have that as a palate cleanser, and right at the end of Link's Awakening as well. That's another really annoying thing that I'll save to. It's a great game, but there's a bit at the end which really has, I won't swear, teed me off.
Was this the dungeon where you have to drop the column through the dungeon?
No, I quite enjoyed that one.
Did you? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's a good puzzle dungeon. Now, this one is where you need to get an item to decipher a guide to the dungeon. And to get that item, you've got to complete what you think is a side quest, but it's not. It's a critical path quest, and it's really stupid. I'll talk about that on Retro Asylum rather than here. So, trying to finish games, mate. Not a lot of... Oh, music-wise, I'll finish on this. So a couple of months ago, I ordered... quite like my video game music. And a couple of months ago, I ordered this special edition Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster set for the Switch. I splurged a little bit and got the special edition, which comes with the most amazing set of vinyls of a compilation of rearranged tracks from the first six Final Fantasy games. I've absolutely adore it. Like the art on the vinyl, the music, man, it's just
so beautifully put together. I saw
it's just so
lovingly made. Yeah,
like they have such world class arrangers who work at Square Enix. You know, I mean, the original compositions are obviously incredible, but like these arrangers, like the way they take this 8-bit music and 16-bit music and stick an orchestra on it, like they are just geniuses in my mind.
Oh, it's fantastic, isn't it? They did a really good one with the remake of Wonder Boy Dragon's Trap.
Yeah,
where you could flip between the modern music and then the old one, and it's fantastic. Really, really good.
Absolutely beautiful.
There was a band that still around called Architects, and I saw them before they kind of really blew up, and they used to come out to the opening arpeggios of Final Fantasy VII. And they would play a little bit of that and then go into the set. It was extraordinary stuff.
What they're like,
music. And that arpeggios. And so it's just music. So they just read it and gone, okay, I'll play it on guitar. It's quite often on a lot of guitar playing websites and sort of meet social medias. They'll have people who'll play that whole sort of thing on guitar, and it's just, it's beautiful. Acoustically and stuff, it's beautiful.
Ue Matsue, what a genius he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's it, mate. That's it. So, yeah, I need to, hopefully by the time we next speak on Tuesday, I'll have finished at least two of the games that I've got on the go, which will feel like a bit of a weight off the shoulders.
Just quickly, Chris. The RA community playthrough, when that comes around to the next Final Fantasy game, I believe it's 4.
Yeah.
Do you play the original or are you going to play the Pixel remaster?
Got to be the original, mate.
Oh,
you know the answer to that.
100%.
So first Super Nintendo Final Fantasy we played, I've got to play it on the original. It's got to be. I've spent about 150 hours playing NES 8-bit RPGs. I'm not going to chuck that.
This is the payoff.
This is the payoff now. 16-bit goodness.
Mm. What about you, Mads?
Yeah, what about you, Mads?
So gaming-wise, the only thing I've been up to is Yakuza. And,
you love it.
I'm probably not going to talk too much about it this time, but because we're going to be recording already Tuesday, I hope. First episode of Yakuza. I can spoil things by saying I am loving it right now. But apart from that, no, I'll keep my powder dry.
You've been on a journey, mate.
I have definitely been on a journey, yes. But I had fun reading Maupin's comments because it seems like Maupin and I are actually the same person. I feel like I'm just a Maupin impersonator at some points because we always have the same view. So if he doesn't come around and starts enjoying it now, I'd be really surprised. But let's see. His view on the game up until Act 3 was exactly like mine. So let's see. But right now, I'm really enjoying it. I wanted to show it to my youngest earlier today, just because she's very much into her anime and Japan, very interested in Japan and such. So I thought this is a recreation of Tokyo. So I'm just going to show her running a bit of running around. And the first thing I did was by accident talk to the little boy in the arcade who started giving me cards, playing cards, very scantily clad ladies. It all became a bit weird. But it's a good game.
This is what you've been doing, Dad.
Yes.
We're leaving the door open
that,
now.
More on that really, Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah, leave the door open.
But apart from that, yeah, lots of music, because this is the music episode. So I just ordered a... concert tickets for what is it, the day before Zelda, so that would be the 11th of May, because that's how I count time these days.
Zelda Eve.
Yes, Zelda the Eve. Day before Zelda. It's I'm going to see Mesa. It's an Italian doom metal band that I'm really looking forward to. I just listened to their newest record today as well. It's really good. I'm looking forward to that. And there's a Danish band, I forget what they're called right now, that's doing the warm-up, which is also some doom rock, really. So if you don't know your doom, it's slow, it's deep, and it's very melodic. And, I mean, a track can be like 10, 12 minutes. Droning out there. It's I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great concert, I'm sure.
Yes.
Nice. Mm.
So, should we dive in to the music of Brutal Legend? You guys ready?
Ready.
Let's go.
Go on, ready.
High and wide.
Yes. That's what I'm talking about. there's like 107 songs, and I preferred, obviously, you know, a 20 minute presentation on each of those songs. Which I
that's going to be good.
Just a short one.
Just a short one.
honestly, guys, I thought I knew the game, and I had a pretty good bead on the stuff that was going on there, and I thought I got a lot of references. Nowhere near. You know, once I started scratching and playing it again and looking at it, I was like, it is there's so much that we would never be able to cover. But it's that's the great thing about the playthrough podcast though, is that like I thought I'd play that game, sound, never ever looking at it again, and then play it through again with a whole maybe like 20 years old or something, that game is maybe 10 or 15. Mm. And it was a whole different set of eyes and ears in this case to play it again. But I was really encouraged that all, for the most part, everybody really enjoyed it and really enjoyed the music in the group, which I was really happy to see. Like, you know, it's a good thing that.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I kick us off then with a question to you two metalheads? Like, sure. when you fire up Brutal Legend, like, do you what do you fire it up for? Do you fire it up because you want to play a really good video game, or do you fire it up because you want to be surrounded by all of that kind of metal imagery, or is it just literally to listen to the music?
For me, it's when it first came out, it didn't have that big of fanfare when it came out, to be honest with you. Jack Bath wasn't as big as he is now.
Yeah.
And there wasn't an awful lot of metal in video games. There's a couple of sporadic things, Crewball on the Mega Drive, and there was some bits and pieces. There was an Aerosmith video game. There was a few, but it wasn't it. But it was just to kind of support that. The fact that there was even a game based in music I liked meant that I bought that game.
You know,
even before the thoughts of playing, it was like, if I support this, they might make another one. But obviously, so, they didn't. But that was the reason why to play.
So was it the metal theme over like the Double Fine name that attracted you to it back in the day?
Yeah, because you know Tim Schafer's name. It's the same thing as like, you know, when they bring out the next Resident Evil, you'll go, okay, if you like that, you'll buy Resident Evil. You won't even need to see one stitch of a screenshot. You'll buy it.
Resident Evil game.
It's already earned that thing with you. This was kind of almost answered like at least 20% of the question, will I like this game? Well, I know I'm going to like the music.
Yeah.
I'll probably like the aesthetic.
Yeah.
And let's see what the game's like then, you know, what's going on with it, you know, and play the games. Like Doom's a good example. Doom isn't heavy metal, but the soundtrack very much is. And that really helps the game. It really, everything works with it, you know, the imagery and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that I play that purely because it's a great video game. And the fact that metal music is a byproduct.
It's a bonus.
But it's just, exactly. So if there's a particular artist you like and they were doing the next Final Fantasy soundtrack and you like that artist, you win-win. You know, it's the game's good and the music's good. But when I first played Brutal Legend, for me, it was about kind of, you know that meme of Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the screen and he sees something on it in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? It was the same thing. I think that one of the first songs is One Shot at Glory.
Yeah, I love that, yeah.
And I'm a huge Judas Priest fan. And so the minute that comes in, I'm like, well, they've got me. You know, it's beyond criticism.
I mean, the very first stage battle, they started with One Shot at Glory, and that was the perfect song to play there.
Yeah, and even if the kind of some of the real-time strategy elements didn't work, that was all glossed over. Any problems the game had was glossed over by a great soundtrack, you know.
Yeah. I was gonna say, if you're a metalhead, this is just it's so unique. I can't think of another game, and I might be wrong if I am jumping, where it gives you the opportunity to just literally go and play with your idols.
Honestly, Chris and Jim may not, I mean, you'll be aware of like Rob Halford and he's a famous person. Obviously, Lemmy and obviously Ozzy, but they are people that are the Mount Rushmore of that particular music. That's like, you know, you may never see that again in any genre of music, where they've just got everybody together who's like the absolute top of their game. You know, it's astounding. It's probably never happened again, and certainly, you know, in the metal world, and to get all them. And it's weird that some stuff gets kind of like buried the lead. Like Tim Curry does
Yeah, we don't even mention him, I don't think, in the other two episodes.
And it's like, this is extraordinary. And then Lisa Ford is on it and stuff. And when you start unpeeling it, you're like, this is a really, you know, if I let you know, put this out as a script for a movie, people would minds would be blown. Just cameo after cameo. And and just to see, you know, and then now obviously Lenny isn't with us anymore. And so to hear his voice, you know, I've met Lemmy twice, and but to hear his voice again, it was a bit of me choked up, I don't mind saying, gents, you know, because it was like, I mean, if you've ever seen it, and I would suggest you watch this, a good introduction to metal for those listening, the documentary about Lemmy, simply called Lemmy, there's a bit in his house, and his house looks like all of our houses, gents, except he likes World War II and swords and things like that, but he's playing a video game, I think it's Crimson Skies, I think, on the Xbox. He liked his video games. He liked his fruit machines, and he liked his video games. I'm here to tell you, gents, Lemmy was one of us too.
Yeah.
He was one of us. He loved his games, and knowing that he's in this game, and I can pick it up and hear him talking, it's like an old friend coming back to an old friend. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
You said something similar to that, Mads, didn't you? That like hearing his voice got you a little bit choked.
Yeah,
you
got
me
choked up. I mean, I've never seen him actually, but I've read his autobiography, and I listened to his music for years, and I feel like I know him in some way. So yeah, it got me quite choked up actually. But he was a huge gamer. I remember reading in his autobiography, whenever they went to Japan, the thing he was most excited about was after the first night out, he'd go out to the arcades to see the new games. And he'd always, also other people talking about him would say that if there was an arcade machine or two at the venue where they were playing, you'd always find Lemmy there with a whiskey. So he liked his arcades.
If you ever go to the Rainbow in LA, at the corner of the bar, there's it used to be a fruit machine. Now it's like a quiz machine. And that's because of Lemmy. He would go there, and on his insistence, they had one put in. And he loved his game, and he would, you know, he was maybe two steps from putting a Vectrex in at the Rainbow. It was close.
Yeah.
Jim, don't you find that, like, you know, as you know, non-metal heads, and you know, I like my rock music, but I you know, I'm far from a metal head, or probably even a metal fan.
We'll make a metal head out
like,
of it, mate.
But don't you find it fascinating that, like, metal is more than a genre of music. It seems like there's no other genre of music that they could make a video game of and around.
Wouldn't do it if
folk music. You wouldn't find the Brutal Legend version.
No, I think the only thing you could maybe argue something like Wipeout.
I know what you mean.
The music made that game, didn't it? As much as
Jim's, what? He's 100% right. Like the music was it was very dancey and orbital and things like that, and bands like that. And it was the reason being is it was played in nightclubs, so they would play Wipeout in the top floor of a nightclub or something. So it actually kind of backdoored itself into the culture of what was going on, you know. Yeah. Metal does that pretty much a little bit more up front, but the reason I think metal works is because there's so many subgenres that it's like it lends itself to video games so beautifully. You had the roadies in this, which are kind of like almost like goblins and trolls, and it kind of, there's lots of weird parallels for the different levels of metal, like glam metal and stuff. It kind of fits in, and it just
metal has this beautiful drive for anything that's actiony or driving around the car. The drive of a Pantera song or 3 Inches of Blood that's here.
Yeah,
it's just beautiful to get the blood pumping for that that kind of action.
Yeah,
but it does seem like it is a way of life, or you know, a philosophy, rather than simply the closest I can think of, actually, not in terms of music, is like country and western. You know, like that also, you know, Matt is laughing, thinking how can he compare metal to country and western? But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know where you're coming from. Yeah,
people embody metal. Like, look, I mean, you guys with your beards and your metal t-shirts, like there's an embodiment of metal. Like, but people who are really into country and western, they might wear the trilbies or the kind of lumberjack shirts and stuff like that. There's not many genres of music that can almost take on a life of its own, but metal seems to do that.
A lot of it's kind of driven by individuals. And this is the same for any music that, you know, I dress the way I dress because of various people. I started to grow a beard because there was people in bands I liked who grew beards, and I liked that. And they looked like me and I looked like them. You know, members of Metallica were on stage with jeans and a black T-shirt. And I was like, well, that's cool because I can do that. In the same way that when I saw Jeff Minter, you know, I was like, oh, well, he kind of, when I had long hair, he kind of looked like what I looked like. Mm. And it's a lot of it's drawn by various like people within the industry as well. Like, so like Lemmy isn't just saying metal's great, rock and roll's great. He's telling you how, and giving you some life lessons. This is how you should be as a person. This is how you should treat other people. This is how, what it means to be a good guy. You know, it was more than the music. It was more than that. So, you know, When Mads puts on a T-shirt that says Motorhead, he is saying way more than the music itself. He's talking about how his outlook is maybe politically, what his outlook is on how he treats people. And it's a really, you know, that's a really poignant thing that these individual people bring.
Fascinating.
It's too deep, that, wasn't it? We were meant to be laughing about metal and
no, I think it's
born demons and stuff.
Jim, did you have a point that you were going to jump in?
Yeah, I was just going to just mention like fashion and music. They always go hand in hand, don't they? With metal, there's a look, and even might turn your nose up at this, but like back at like in the early 2000s, when I was listening to like Limp Bizkit all the time and Deftones and things like that. I went out.
You're on dodgy ground here,
Milton. No, I know, but I went out in baggy jeans and a backwards cap because you were making a statement, weren't you? And that's what it was. That's what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whether it's cheesy as it is, do you know what I mean? I went out in a Papa Roach t-shirt and baggy jeans. I was making a statement.
You
were
saying I'm metal.
I'm thinking I need to see pictures, Jim. Photos. So, that's going to be used for the cover of this episode.
Yes.
Definitely not, though. I'll see if I can dig some out from my time at Reading Festival years ago.
That'd be good.
The thing that struck me about the music in this game, I'm actually looking on the Brutal Legend wiki now at a list of all the songs, which I'm sure you guys have seen. Like the thing that the past few weeks have taught me is, you know, if you would have said to me a couple of months ago, heavy metal, I would have said, don't like that, screaming, too loud, not melodic enough. Like, what has really kind of opened my eyes is just the breadth of metal.
Yeah.
And really kind of, I thought heavy metal was something which started in the 2000s. But it's obviously very wrong, and I accept that now. But I mean, look, just to read a couple, like coming down this list: symphonic black metal, power metal, industrial gothic metal, hard rock, classic metal, melodic death metal. I mean, do people have, I presume they do, like their favorite kind of subgenres?
Quite
often you'll go to a show, there's four bands playing, and there will be the different shades of that, and that's how you kind of you break up the show. You go, okay, well, we'll have this band on. Like symphonic metal is a little bit less kind of aggro than others, so you maybe put that in the midway through the sets of the bands. And you have a band that does an aggressive thing, and it all adds to the different flavors of it of a show. And people do gravitate to certain ones. Some bands almost kind of transcend their own little genre, you know, like Metallica now are more for everything rather than the thrash band that they started out as, for example. But yeah, I mean, that list of songs as well, 107 or 108, I think it is.
Yeah.
There's some deep cuts on there. It's not just the kind of now that's what I call metal. It's not that.
That's what I love about this. Even with the huge artists, like they got the Motorhead there, of course. They're not just playing the Ace of Spades or the hugest hits. I wouldn't call them deep cuts, the Motorhead songs, but still, it's not the songs that everybody know. And I like that. Judas Priest, though, they went for the popular ones. It's all from Painkiller and Screaming for Vengeance, I think.
It's funny,
beautiful
listen to the when he goes past the Portaloos, they didn't put this in the game as a song, but you can hear a guy whistling one of their biggest hits, Breaking the Law. But if the song's on it, you can hear a guy whistling Breaking the Law. And he only got that from the second playthrough. Yeah. And it's like, it's extraordinary. I mean, it's, you've got to understand that, like, you know, Tim Schafer's first album, Diary of a Madman by Ozzy, he got to that when he's 14. Some 20 or so years later, he gets the opportunity to sit with and go and tell Lemmy what he wants Lemmy to say, and you know what Rob that must have been. You imagine meeting your heroes after that long.
Yeah.
How extraordinary is that, you know?
Yeah, and getting them to read your script.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And like Jack Black's like 3,000 words or something he recorded for this.
Yeah.
That's like three times a film script. You know, you can't do that. Unless you truly love it, and it's nice that now we're seeing Jack Black be, and he was obviously in the Mario movie, and that's now we know he loves video games, but back then we didn't. So whenever anybody normal or from the normal world flew their heavy metal flag, it was such an amazing thing. It was like, oh, Jack Black's a metalhead, that's amazing. You know, to the uninitiated, that was, you know, that was a big deal. You know, I've had the privilege of meeting a few famous people, and my mum was the barometer if they were famous or not. I would mention someone's name.
Yeah.
I would say James Hetfield, and she'd be like, I don't care. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. But the one person she did mark out for was Jack Black.
Yeah. Okay.
She'd seen him as a comedian, you know?
Yeah.
What did you make of that intro when you first fired up the game, you know, and he's walking into the record shop?
I think it's Republic Records in East LA. That's a quite a famous record store. Yeah. I know Henry Rollins used to go there and stuff. And he's probably, you know, a lot of famous people cite that store. That's a real place. He just obviously walks in. I don't know if they even tells him he's recording, and off he goes. And the minute that started up, I was like, this is one of me. He's my people. You know, and then he starts flicking through the albums, and you see some classic, I think you see some Dio albums and what have you. And I was just like, well, even if this game's rubbish, I'm still in. You know, when you bought your first game and you didn't have any money for any other game, you're like, I don't care if it's rubbish, or like, I'm gonna make myself enjoy it. It's a good game. I think what did you say? It was a 10 out of 10, 6 out of 10, someone said, and I thought that was perfect.
Yeah.
Yep. But if it had been rubbish, I still would have come on a podcast some many years later and defended the game, because it was like, it's a part of me. You know, I love that. Did you like that introduction? Because that was fun. That is unexpected, wasn't it?
It starts, I can't think, Jim, can you think of another game that starts in that way? I actually, do you know what I thought? I thought that I'd bought a special edition of the game, and I'd put in like a documentary disc. So I immediately got my box and I was like, where's the other disc? Where's the game disc? You know, it's like, I've obviously loaded up a documentary. That's what
it is quite unique. I loved it. I really loved that little intro. And I like that the menu is also just him moving the album cover around and flicking it over, right?
Breaking the fourth wall when it wasn't.
Yeah. It sets the tone right off the bat, doesn't it? In terms of... You know, by the time you get to that menu, you kind of know what you're in for. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be, it is a love letter, isn't it, to the genre of music, the whole thing. Yeah. What are some of your favourites then, Coop, looking at the soundtrack? If you had to pick a few out, you know, where?
Oh, yeah. I'll just pick the first sort of 63 that come to mind. I'll just go through them now. The top of the shop for me, I mean, One Shot of Gloria off the album Painkiller. Painkiller is like is one of Judas Priest's greatest albums, and that song is a real, it's still in the set now. That's a real high. But for me, it's one of my favourite songs of all time. It's We Are the Road Crew by Motorhead, because it was the first time as a kid I'd heard a song that was instructional, and it told me what it was going to be like on tour. And then some 20 years later, it is what it's like to be on tour. And it's one of the best songs about that. And then,
Of course, this was a song that Lemmy wrote for his road crew. So he describes it in his autobiography that right after he'd written it, he invited the road crew up into the studio and played for them before they recorded it, and they were crying, and so they were so happy. So
when you do anything with Motorhead, so say you're part of what's called the local crew, like a local venue, and they come in and you help with them, they give you a plectrum to say thank you and stuff. It's nice. But if you actually work with them, so I did a show with a band called Ugly Kid Joe, and they're very good friends with Motorhead. And Phil, the guitarist, he came and did Killed by Death, which is a great Motorhead song, with them. And so I had to kind of look after his amp for that time. So technically, I kind of work for him. They give you a Remember, this is my favorite song. They give you a plectrum that says, "You are the road crew."
Awesome.
And that's like, that's to a young lad that was touring. That was like, you know, next level stuff for me. So
have
we
you still got
crew.
It.
Yeah, I'll find it. I'll dig it out in a sec. I'll route around why someone else is. When I eventually let someone else talk, I'll have a quick route. I'll find it. But yeah, so I'm just trying to. I've got my list of. There's so much on there. Crack the Sky by Mastodon is a great song, and it's slightly deeper cut as well. So I was surprised when it came on. They'd go for something called like Blood and Thunder. And then Youth Gone Wild, mainly because that was another band that I'd worked with and toured with Skid Row. So to hear that, I was like, this is just, it was like a time capsule, you know. And then there's a song called The Metal by Tenacious D. Although it's kind of funny, there's a wonderful element of truth about how metal has survived and become a thing. And where it's played within the game is really good. And
I don't think I remember.
Those five are kind of the best ones for me.
Where's that in the game then?
It's one of the side missions. I did make a note about it. The thing, it's one of the side missions, I think.
I've definitely heard it. In the game, yeah.
I played it like and fully. I did all the side missions. I seeked out all the guitar solos and did virtually everything, even some of the discords, the downloadable content as well.
Was it one of the Hunter missions?
I think so. Yeah, I did have on my notes, I think, but yeah, it's one of the. It's really late game on. I think it's really late in the game. You unlock stuff to do that, but the minute that kicked in, I was just like, this is unbelievable. This was like made for me. This video game. And I just wish it was a little bit better. You know,
yeah,
just a
that
little
is
bit
the
better,
problem, but, isn't it? Yeah.
But I'm just the music. Yeah, there's about two top sort of five songs for me. Maybe it's a couple that should go in there. But in my top five, Mads, what did you like, by the way?
This is so hard because I can't pick 5 or 10 or 20.
Yeah, you can.
you're gonna make an album now, Mads.
I love Ozzy. I love Motorhead. I love Judas Priest. So all of the five Judas Priest songs, I love. They're brilliant, brilliant songs. I mean, Painkiller is a beauty of an album, and Screaming for Vengeance as well. But going a bit deeper, I really like Girl School. So I love that they got them on there as well. Sadly, yeah. It was just Bomber, which is just a cover of a Motorhead song, but because they've got some great stuff themselves, so why not play some of that instead? But Fast as a Shark as I Accept is a song I've listened to since I was a tiny, tiny kid. I love that. There's a point where they build up to the guitar solo, and all of a sudden, two guitars play in tandem. A bit of the solo.
That's a great
never stops to make me happy. I mean, listening to that, I know exactly where it is in the song, and I'd be humming along with the solo. But that build up and that solo, it's like listening to classical music, and it makes me happy, makes me smile from ear to ear every single time. So I have to shout that out. Except apart from that, I love Skeleton Witch. So Soul Thrashing Black Sorcery is a great track. Great, great track.
Is that one of the really heavy ones?
That is one of the really heavy ones, yeah. I loved, and that was new for me this time. I actually haven't listened to 3 Inches of Blood before, only in this game. And now I have. Now I'm going to seek out some of their
superb
albums.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, those two tracks were just superb when you were running around or driving around in a car. It was so, so good.
I often put a lot of that music on whilst I'm playing Demon Souls, just
yeah, would suit nicely, I think.
if I had to give Chris an entry point into metal, I would say it's metal is the Souls like game music.
Yeah.
It's that kind of tough to get into, impossible to break down. You know, initially very difficult to kind of figure out what's going on, and then ultimately rewarding.
I like the analogy, and it works. It does work. Yeah. So, Matt,
start out somewhere like the Judas Priest here. I mean, One Shot of Glory is one of my favorite tracks as well. So, start out listening to that, and then you can move into the more heavy stuff.
You can actually hear the melody in the singing as well, which I always appreciate. But you know that Skeleton Witch song that you've just mentioned. So that is listed the genre for that song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Blackened, deathly thrash metal. I mean, what is that?
Who comes up with this? Is there a voice?
I've seen some dubious titles. I've seen Bedroom Laptop Metal is one I particularly enjoy. I don't quite know what that's
You can't
sound
trust
like,
the genres that here because they've got Def Leppard down as hard rock and not New Wapum. It should be, of course, so you can't trust what's on that list.
Not what?
New Wapum.
Nwobum.
The new wave of British heavy metal.
Oh, is that what NWOBHM is?
That's exactly what that sounds like.
That's it. And that is where most of my favorite music comes from.
So that is a genre, Nwobum.
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 Yeah.
And that is like
the book Coop was talking about like an hour ago by Michael Hahn is called Denim and Leather, and it's all about Nwobum, how that started. And it's a great read, by the way.
The new wave of British heavy metal.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
And what happened is that kind of was a
spring of all metal that kind of come out like bands like Diamond Head and things like that. And then in America, that they influenced then Metallica and Anthrax and Slayer. And basically kind of those American bands sped things up and went a bit heavier and did some things with it. And it's cyclical then. And then so there's like there's new waves of different genres, and they're all being referred to that. But that was the first one they called the new wave of British heavy metal. And
so
it's
that's
a very,
what, like in the '80s, is it? So
To there's some elements of the '70s as well. You could say that Wishbone Ash were kind of almost involved in that. Like so, it's all that twin guitar, slightly faster, a lot more solos, riff orientated stuff. It was after the blues, so there was the blues. And Sabbath and things like that.
So Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath, Deep Purple all came out of like the heavier blues stuff.
And like Sounds Magazine did like kind of give them the title the new wave of British heavy metal, which is like Judas Priest and stuff, and like as Mad says, Def Leppard. And that's really they're not hard rock. They're very much that new wave of British heavy metal. Like you wouldn't if you were with people within the scene wouldn't call Judas Priest a rock band. They would call them a heavy metal band. And similarly, Lemmy himself called Motorhead a rock and roll band. He pertained to the differences in it. New wave of British heavy metal. New album.
Interesting. So why would Lemmy not want his band to be called a heavy metal band?
He was from a time which he called one of his biggest quotes is he could remember a time before rock and roll, which is like quite an interesting thing to say. So remember a time before that, and his favorite band was like the Beatles.
Yeah.
So all of his favorite artists, people like Little Richard and stuff like that, were very much rock and roll.
Yeah.
4/4 blues based stuff like that. So that's where he came from. Now he's a heavy metal icon, but he would never say that he was heavy. He would say he was rock
he
and roll.
He plays rock and roll. Yeah.
And in so many
he
ways,
used to say that they played rock and roll, but at 100 miles per hour.
Right.
Yeah. You said that it was great music to drive into the side of a motorway. Pillar. Is that even show? But he would even though they've influenced tons of really heavy bands, they would see as being a rock and roll band. There was still swing and rhythm to what Lemmy was doing. He played in another band which was more kind of like called Headcat, that was more kind of almost not country but certainly kind of rockabilly, and he loves that. And he was a big champion of punk as well. Motorhead have like lots of punk connections. They're not just metal. They opened up the doors for a lot of different musics to kind of get in. They were the first band I seen play on the television set, and they played on The Young Ones, and that was the first time I ever saw
remember that.
Metal.
Yeah.
And that a lot of people speaks. I talked to on the show, it was the first time.
Why do you think that the British scene has been so influential? What was it about? What was it something to do with, I don't know, was it like the, did it come out of the punk movement? What is it about the British scene?
All the good metal that you'll ever hear comes from some elements of difficulties and strife. Most best of music comes from that.
Yeah.
So a lot of the bands that like the modern day sort of Mount Rushmore of metal came from Birmingham or areas of real poverty and disadvantage and real sort of pollution and bad Ozzy says in his documentary, people were talking about, he was listening to music on the radio and they were talking about flowers in your hair and stuff. And And he said he didn't have any shoes on his feet. You know, it's like he couldn't he couldn't really get in with that. He couldn't. That wasn't what he was about. He worked in a factory. Tony Iommi worked in a factory, and it didn't represent their life. So they were like, well, okay, well, we're going to play music that represents our life, and our life is pretty horrible, and it's pretty
hard and loud.
Hard, yeah. And so that gets reflected in the music, you know. So like someone like Sepultura are a band from Brazil, and you know, come from places where they have favelas and really really troubled issues going on and poverty and stuff like that, and it sometimes generates the greatest music because it's born from strife. And unfortunately, the UK was a pretty dismal place around the 70s and 80s. It was particularly awful, but that does generate great metal.
So what you're saying is we've got Margaret Thatcher to thank for metal.
Oh, God, no.
In some ways, yes.
Oh, God, no. But it comes from strife. A lot of it's hard to write happy, heavy metal. It doesn't really like that. But what's interesting, though, Chris, is that when you do listen to it, people who maybe are not familiar with it will see it and go, okay, it sounds very aggressive, or it sounds like, you know, attacking. It's coming from a power point of view. You feel empowered. I'm not alone. I am more than what I am. And there's other people that think this way, and it's an empowering thing. You'll see that at
concerts as well. I mean, singers in a death metal band will, and the music will be just pounding out there. The drummer will be going crazy, and the singer is yelling at you, but he's not really yelling at, he's yelling with the audience, because it's energy being given from him to the audience. Energy. So there's no anger towards the audience, even though he's looking from the outside. Maybe that's what you see, but definitely not. It's all one big movement here. It's a one big exchange of power, isn't it?
Yeah, like take someone like, okay, let's pick a really, really aggressive heavy band, Cannibal Corpse. There's a name for you, Chris. Cannibal Corpse.
Here you go, Jim. Jim, write that down.
I'll write that down now. Yeah, we'll have a look at some album covers.
The lead singer, a gentleman called Corpse Grinder, is like massive.
Jesus Christ.
He sings real really name? Horrible lyrics and really tough stuff, but when he's not on stage, one of the things he likes to do is play, you know, those grabbing machines that grab like fluffy toys.
Yeah.
He plays them, wins, gets the fluffy toys, and then gives them to children's charities.
Bless him. Corpse Grinder.
Corpse Grinder. Yep.
Well, and if you want to see, Chris, some of the strife that that it comes from the metal world, just read the text of Breaking the Law. Read the lyrics for that, for example, because they're quite easy and on the nose, and you can understand what it's all about. I mean, young people around 1980 in the UK having a hard time finding jobs and feeling worthless. That's what this is all about. And that's what that song is on.
I have no place here. Yes, like those lyrics and that video is just, you know,
yeah,
it's their reaction to being almost, you know, kind of stifled, and like I want to get out, I want to do something with my life, you know. And it was escaping, and many in many ways, like video games, heavy metal is escapism as well, you know, and a way to release your tensions. You'll never meet someone who comes off. I've been with tons of bands with the most aggressive vocalists and bands, but they are the calmest people after they come off stage because
that's
they've
what Mads always
exercised
says,
it out. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. You've always said that, Mads, haven't you? That, you know, you've never felt more safe than in a metal concert, you know, surrounded by people who are fans of that genre. Because
exactly, it's as if us metal heads, we are all friends, even though we don't know each other. So I feel very, very safe there, and I've given some examples earlier. I think I've mentioned those on the show already, but it is a very welcoming crew. Really,
yeah. One of the things that I noticed about on Brutal Legend that I hadn't noticed until I played it again was that, and this tells you how deep the community is in. If you play that game on either on a particular date, there's three of them. The icon changes. The autosave icon changes.
Does it?
And I'll tell you the three dates that you need to have a look at. It's December the 8th, where the icon changes to a dime, because that represents the day that Dimebag Darrell, the guitarist from Pantera, was killed on stage.
Wow.
And it changes on December the 8th. And March 19th is the icon changes to RR, which stands for Randy Rhoads, which was Ozzy's guitarist. And that's his date of passing in 1982. He passed away. He was killed in a plane crash. And then on February the 19th, Bon Scott I think it comes with BS or something like that, I think it comes up with, it's to celebrate his passing in 1980. The level of detail to think to do that, you know, is it just shows how much the Tim adored it, and it true. We keep saying it was a labor of love. Like, it's just interesting that.
Yeah,
fascinating. I never knew that actually.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Jim, what are some of your favorites? You know, as a non metaler, did you have any favorite tracks in the game?
So I did. So some of the stuff that I've gone and sought out outside of the game has, and it's funny, like listening to you, but the metalheads talk actually was Judas Priest. So the only song that I was like aware of by Judas Priest was Breaking the Law. And then I've heard there was other tracks that I've picked up in the soundtrack that I've heard before without knowing the names and stuff. Obviously, like the more mainstream stuff, like, you know, Motorhead and all that sort of stuff. You're aware of all that, aren't you? Because it's so...
Yeah, it's common.
It's mainstream. It's common. Yeah. But yeah, it's weird. Like, so yeah, definitely the Judas Priest. I've been sort of, I couldn't tell you the track names, but I've gone and like listened to him on Spotify. Just want to, and it's a bit of admittedly, it's a bit of a shitty way to consume music. And that the way I consume music is I listen to kind of what I know. Yeah. And then occasionally I'll dive into like a playlist that's been an algorithm has put together for me.
Right. Of all the things that you know and like.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But occasionally you might pick up something in there that, so like there was one that I think, let me have a double check on this. I'll make sure I get it right. It was Raven Bedard, and it's, I never heard of her, but it must, listening to this music outside of what I would normally listen to, has put it into a playlist. I've listened to it and absolutely loved it. Yeah. So yeah, it's like broadened my horizons, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I've been listening to a lot of Black Sabbath and Ozzy Osbourne stuff, I was aware of some of the older Black Sabbath stuff before we played this game, but I wasn't. I had no idea that stuff, you know, Mr. Crowley, which I'm sure is like, you know, saying I like the Beatles and my favorite song is, I don't know, When I'm 64 or something like that, which, you know, so I completely get people saying, oh, roll their eyes. But I was watching a YouTube video of Mr. Crowley live earlier with, I think there was one with that guy you've just mentioned, Randy Rhoads, playing with him. Yeah. Oh my God, like that was amazing.
At every point, like in most sort of metal shows, there's a point where the guitarist will have an extended solo.
Yeah,
where
he will play like 4 minutes.
Mr. Crowley and a song called Suicide Solution as well is one of those moments where that, it's got two solos, which is unusual for a song. It's got two solos. That is still held up as one of the high watermarks of guitar playing, because
it was unbelievable. Yeah,
Randy Rhoads came from a classical background. He was a classical guitar player.
Was he?
So all that stuff that he played, metal, what was doing more of the blues thing, like Sabbath, they were doing more of the blues thing. He brought on this whole thing of unusual classical scales and techniques that people hadn't even heard before. And it was he was kind of coming up to prominence at the same time as someone like Eddie Van Halen was.
Yeah,
and they were both just breaking the glass ceiling, like the. So that stuff, there's an album you want to check out where called Tributes, because obviously he passed away.
Yeah.
And then a short while after, they released a double album called Tributes. And on that is what most people consider the definitive version of Mr. Crowley.
Oh,
as
wow,
a funny
okay.
aside, Ozzy was once at was one of his guitarists. Ozzy was at Zach Wilde's house once, and Zach Wilde's got a huge picture of Aleister Crowley, the guy the song's based on. And Ozzy was like, who's that? And he's like, that's the guy you've been singing about for 13 years.
That's brilliant.
Right.
But yeah, that album's definitely worth seeking out. It's a wonderful thing.
It was also one of the moments in the game where I really enjoyed listening to the music in the game. I even driving around in the Deuce, I even quite enjoyed some of the, because as Mads pointed out, I think in the first episode that we did, a lot of the heavier stuff is played almost as ambient music while you're driving around in the Deuce again. And I, you know, for my sensibilities, I appreciated that. But I didn't, There were times when I didn't feel like the game and the music really kind of, I didn't feel as if there was a lot. I thought, like, that's a track and let's put it there. But I didn't really feel like, you know, the One Shot of Glory in that first stage battle, for instance, great track. But my God, I spent about 55 minutes on that level. And after 55 minutes of One Shot of Glory, just looping and looping and looping, you know, maybe not great. But Mr. Crowley in the game is when the scene where you see Ophelia, I think, being dragged up. The Dark Ophelia comes up from the bottom of the lake, isn't
it? So that's why you like Mr. Crowley.
Well, I do like a bit of Dark Ophelia, but I do love that song. The other one that I really like, and I'm desperately looking for it. So one of the
Aussie tracks, or
it's down as fantasy epic metal on this list. So Dragon Force. Yes.
See, I was just about to say, I think you guys would probably like Dragon Force because that's very much like, I mean, they love their video games as well.
Yes, and video it's very game much, music.
Yes, I mean, especially, yeah, both Inhuman Rampage and Ultra Beatdown, those two albums, you would love those because it's like classical music being played crazy fast on two guitars and they are very, very skilled.
Yeah.
And then this heroic song that might as well been a theme for a video game being sung in the background.
It's Through the Fire and Flames, I think, is
for example. Yeah, Through the Fire and Flames is here. That's on Guitar Hero as well, one of the hardest songs to play on Guitar Hero. Yeah.
The guitarist is one of the guitarists is called Herman Lee. And if you go on his sort of YouTube stuff, he plays a lot of video game music. He does a lot of Mario noises on the guitar and things like that. He adores video games. And that's, you know, I think, like, it's lovely to hear you guys discovering, like, songs that, for me, were like, I've known for years. It's beautiful to hear you discover songs. And that's one of the things video games, I think, gives us. It's the only medium. It's not like a movie where you're 2 hours and you're done, or an hour and a half and you're done. Video games, it took me about, at a fully completion, about 20-something hours to fully complete it, about 12 on the main story. Mm. But you're in there for that long with these songs that some of them are just going to stick. They're just going to stick and become, like, you know, there was a guy putting a thing on YouTube the other day about the pause music on GoldenEye. It's a piece of beautiful a work of art, and it's because you spend time with these songs that they just become part of who you are now. Like, you know,
that's it. It's I think I said on, I think it was the first Brutal Legend we recorded, I can't ever hear Video Killed the Radio Star without thinking Vice City, Grand Theft Auto Vice City. I can't. It's
Yeah, that's it. And this is where I think games are more powerful than movies because, you know, although movies have great scores and often great licensed soundtracks, you know, you're watching a movie for hour and a half to 3 hours and you might watch that movie 4 or 5 times, but that's still only 15 hours of your life. Whereas, you know, in video games such as this, you know, even this, which is just a short one, you know, still more than that, 15, 16 hours, and you're spending it with these songs. And going back to the Mr. Crowley thing again, you know, I will always associate that song now. Every time I hear it, I'll associate it wrongly for most people. But for me, that will be very closely tied to Brutal Legend.
The Dark Ophelia.
And the Dark Ophelia, of course. The woman of my nightmares, dreams, nightmares. But what it's done for me playing Brutal Legend and you know, learning a little bit, scratching at the surface of this stuff, is that it has made me appreciate music that I've not listened to for a long time. Like, I was really into Def Leppard, late 90s, you know, loved that stuff. But I haven't listened to it for a long time. I was driving over to, took my little boy and a couple of his mates. I gave them a lift somewhere a few weeks back. And I just put a Def Leppard on album on Spotify. We listened to it in the car. And the Pour Some Sugar on Me came on, which isn't in the game. Yeah. But I had all of those kids in the car singing Pour Some Sugar on Me in the car.
Nice.
That's a
classic.
Been listening to some Led Zepp again and it kind of brought me back to it, which has been lovely.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say, like, that song isn't on there, because one of the things that really struck me the second time I played it was the stuff the bands that weren't involved in it. You know, the Titans like Lenny and Ozzy. but there's no Metallica, there's no Iron Maiden. Yeah. And you're like, wow, what happened there? And it's difficult to find an answer, but you have to read between the lines a little bit. Yes, there's probably licensing stuff going on there that stopped it, because Iron Maiden were very protective of their
Iron Maiden were actually asked, but they were very protective, and they had their own games going with Power Slave and stuff like that.
Of course so they did.
And Metallica had just done, they had their own like Metallica Guitar Hero there, that their own thing. You could see that why they maybe didn't choose to pin it. But that said, Iron Maiden's all over this game.
All over it.
There's so much. I mean, you know, Eddie Riggs, you know, that's, you know, it's Derek Riggs is the artist, the famous Iron Maiden artist.
I didn't know that. Yeah, that's Iron Maiden. And
Eddie is obviously them. Everybody knows that is their mascot. And it's like we just slam them two together. It's like, how'd you get away? It's like, you know, making a soft drink and calling it Pepsi Coca Cola and no one saying anything.
True.
And then, you know, you think. One of the interesting ones, though, isn't it, is Dio, Ronnie James Dio. I'm really surprised. But then looking into it, he was meant to be the Emperor before Tim Curry did that. So I don't know if it was a health thing, because he wasn't necessarily unhealthy then. But that's a real shame that Dio isn't on there, because visually there's a lot of references to the to albums like Last in Line and Holy Diver. So whenever you see like the kind of horned demons in the background with chains and stuff, that imagery is very much Ronnie James Dio's sort of thing, you know?
It's definitely a name that I remember from watching an interview, I think, with either Tim Schafer or Jack Black. I'm pretty sure he was mentioned at least once.
Yeah. There's a wonderful documentary, I think it's on Netflix at the moment, about James Dio. And Jack Black's all over that sort of professor's love for it. It's a shame that he couldn't get on there and be kind of like Lemmy is like set in stone then for eternity in a video game. Yeah. And it's like Lars Halford, you know, it's like Lars Ulrich from the Metallica drummer. And Rob Halford. And they're so obvious, these things. It's like, come on, let's just say it. You know, it's
well, I didn't know who Rob Halford was until we started playing Brutal Legend. Mad said he was going to punch him in the face. So, are there any missteps for you guys on the set? Are there any songs that came on in you? Because presumably you don't like every metal song that's ever been written, right? I mean, are there any songs on here that you know you come on and you just think, I'll skip this, I hate this?
Nope.
Mads, anyone?
Nope, not a single one. Nope, I enjoyed every single one of them. I would sometimes skip ahead just to get that Kill the Orcs or Deadly Sinners on while I was driving. But there was nothing I didn't like listening to, really, was there? I can't remember any, at least.
The only thing I was a little bit, I nearly rubbed up on a little bit, was at the very beginning, they kind of had a little tiny dig at nu metal. And I was like, okay, I get it. Tiny dig at the beginning, the opening cinematics about
Cabbage Girl, or is it called
that? Was it?
And I thought that's a little tough. But then this is the other thing about heavy metal, is that we are definitely one of the biggest forms of music and genres of music that it likes the Mickey being taken out of us. We totally have no ego about it. Like, there's lots of mock, like, you only have to look at something like Spinal Tap and Steel Panther to see how we don't take ourselves massively seriously.
Come on, you are a bit sniffy about nu metal, though, aren't you?
I'm not. It comes up a lot, this, because now one of the bigger figureheads for that is like Limp Bizkit. And they came up and everybody's like, you know, oh, this is great. And then they kind of went down again. And then everybody's like, oh, it's ridiculous. They're ridiculous. And they're having a massive resurgence. They recently played in Manchester. My friend was at that show, working that show. And it was sold out. And it was fantastic, because people could then realize that actually, yes, it is meant to be. There are elements of it that are meant to be silly. You know, at first we were like, we can't have this. This is damaging the good name of metal. But once you realize and get into what it's actually about, you're like, actually, if it's making a kid pick up a guitar and play heavy music, let's go. You know, it's the same thing as the Stranger Things effect. It's like, you know, initially there were some metalheads that didn't like the fact that Master of Puppets by Metallica was in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of memes about the people saying you can't listen to our music and stuff, and then Metallica themselves.
And it's the whole wearing a band t-shirt and not knowing.
Yeah, that's the time. It's like name three songs by the band t-shirt.
Name the B-side of such and such that were released in 1973.
Yeah. And there is an element of that in the same way that there's a little bit of an element of it within the video game community.
Yeah, it's not, we've all been guilty of it.
It's not maybe as toxic, but it's there. You know, tell me your favorite Final Fantasy game, and if anybody says 7, you're like, oh, you're not a real fan then.
You don't like Mystic Quest 2, the Japanese translate undone.
Yeah. Or what, you're not playing it on original hardware?
Yeah.
What? You haven't got it on vinyl as the same equipment. Yeah. And it's nice. It's just enough that it's not too bad, but every so often you're like, okay.
There's an undercurrent.
There wasn't too many missteps for me. I would, even if there was, ladies and gentlemen, I probably wouldn't tell anybody because I'd have to defend it. I'd have to defend it here. But I can't remember who said it. They were absolutely right. It is a 10 out of 10, 6 out of 10 game. It truly is.
Yeah. You know, you've just said something really funny there about nu metal, and I wonder if, you know, there's something in that about, you know, taking itself seriously as opposed to, you know, there seems to be a playfulness about metal in some ways. Like, you know, you talked about the guy, the corpse grinder guy, who clearly doesn't grind corpses, nor does he probably would have any truck with anybody who did attempt to grind a corpse. It seems like a really nice guy. You know, Lemmy's another example of, you know, someone who sings about stuff, but, you know, is a nice guy. The scene, you know, you have to look at Ozzy Osbourne on stage. You know, he's acting, isn't he, a lot of the time? And there's a playfulness, there's a silliness to it. Whereas, you know, when you look back at when I was, you know, I'm 41. I think we're all of a reasonably similar age. I think, I don't know how old you are, Coop, but yeah, I'm assuming that you're around the same age as the rest of us. Like, you know, when I was 18, 19, a lot of people walking around, you know, with Korn stuff on, and it was very much, it was Korn, it was all that, it was Deftones, and like, it was all very serious, you know what I mean? They all took themselves very seriously.
Some of them did, but then you had like the bands like Less Than Jake and stuff like that, which was, although it wasn't new metal, it was far less serious.
I don't know. It just seems like, you know, the Limp Bizkit stuff, it was all a little bit earnest, you know, and I don't know whether that is, you know,
that kind of comes out and tries to add something to the genre. Like, so even when a band like Slipknot, which is obviously universally famous and it escaped the genre almost and become a bigger thing than it is, when they first came about, they were very unconventional. It's a non-tech. There's like several more members than a four-piece. And there's a DJ. There was a DJ, you know, Sid was a DJ. That was, for a while, still frowned upon. You had to earn your place almost to kind of... The Deftones had a DJ and stuff, and bands like Incubus had DJs. And it takes a while. You have to kind of almost earn your stripes a little bit by proving your worth. So when rap joined metal all the way back to the 80s, there was still a group of people within the genre who were like, we can't let that in because it's going to somehow weaken the music. Now, I think we've really kind of moved forward where there's so many different genres, there's so many different things going on that it's almost now it's welcome. It's like, oh, look, this band's mixed this with this.
Yeah.
You know, they've mixed this with sea shanty songs. Brilliant. And it's like, it's spawning of new generation or genres, I should say. It's not a bad thing anymore.
Surprisingly good things like Irish folk songs metalized. Yeah. So there are a couple of bands doing that. You should seek that out. That's good fun.
Jesus. Or pirate metal.
Yeah, like, pirate metal. Yeah.
This has been a whole new aspect of my life since Andy Gilmore mentioned it last week on the episode. Yeah. Like, there are Spotify playlists of pirate metal, which is like, walk the plank.
And if the metal's too heavy, go check out, I think it's Rock the Plank by the Mad Caddies, which was like a pirate-themed sort of ska punk sort of album.
I think this is brilliant.
When I first kind of like heard bands like Amarth and Viking metal, I struggled to kind of get into that. It was difficult. I remember being in a big festival in Wales called Hammerfest, and they were the headlining act one particular night, and it was packed. It's a huge venue, fits maybe, I don't know, a couple of thousand people. And there was a guy that would go to these shows who was in a really bad way. He had all kinds of disabilities and issues to the point where he was on like a gurney all the time. He had to have like an air with him and stuff. And he had a really terrible quality of life, but he loved his metal. So they were taken to these shows. So fast forward to Hammerfest, and I'm up watching the show a little bit raised up. And I see in the corner, the crowd sort of parting a little bit. I'm like, what's going on there? And what his friends had done is they were like, he loves this band, but he's like bedridden. So they brought him in on the gurney, which they'd fashioned into a Viking warship with all the ship seals. And it went through the crowd. And I was just like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was incredible. Unbelievable.
Mm, wonderful.
So I get it. The Viking metal was after that for me. I was like, we're good. You know, this is great.
This is great. This is the kind of stuff they do. Yeah. And what about like new stuff in the genre then? So do you guys kind of, you know, think, oh, I tease Mads a little bit about this, you know, saying, oh, you know, it's all about the 70s and the 80s, you know, for you guys, you know, is there an up and coming metal scene? Is it vibrant and prominent?
It definitely is. So I listen to lots of new metal as well, but Coop, you're probably a lot better at talking about that than me. Personally, the last 5, maybe 10 years, I've really been going back and going to the mid 70s and from there on into the 80s and then listening to all of that again. But I still keep a touch with the new scene and the new stuff. So yeah, there's so much good stuff coming.
It's good.
Once again, it's there's parallels with the video game business because, you know, 20 years ago, you had to go to a studio to record an album. Now you can do it in your house. Well, if you wanted to code a video game, you can do that in your house now.
Yeah.
And in the same way that when a new game comes out and you're talking, you know, say you're talking to Jim about a game, he'll go, what type of game is it first? And you'll go, okay, it's a first-person shooter or it's a JRPG with, you know, this element or that element to give him some kind of idea of what it is. That's what will happen now is that, you know, a new band will come out and a metalhead will go, oh, what is it? And they'll go, okay, it's like thrash metal, but it's a little bit progressive. That's a normal conversation. It's a similar thing with the video game business. It's the kind of now, whereas it's exploded, where anybody can make a video game now, anybody can record an album now and form a band and put it out there straight away on a streaming service.
Yeah.
So it's exploded. There's good and bad to that. This means there's a lot to get through, but it also means that people are taking chances more. So, you know, when someone brings out a video game and it's like they've made it just for themselves because they're like something like Fez or something like that, which is made purely for that person. And somebody else goes, well, actually, that's what I wanted that game. You've made my video game. Metal is the same way. The people are taking more chances and go, well, I just want to hear this. I want to hear 11-minute songs with droning guitars. I want to hear this where it's really technical and stuff. They want to hear that. I'll just go and make that. And that's what happens now. So it's exciting because every so often you'll find, I like a game you like, you'll find a song or a band you like where you go, wow, this is exactly what I wanted in a song. And now there's such a vibrant scene, it's ridiculous. So Metallica are a band, you know, they've been around for, you know, many, many years. Their album that was released last week is now going to be the number one in the UK. So, and that's a whole load of new people listening to that. So it's very much alive. The Download, the big festival that happens in, I think, about 40 or so days, that's now sold out. That's over 4 days. That's the biggest metal festival in the UK is sold out.
Yeah.
There's clear sort of barometers that people are starting to do. And much like video games, again, it's crossed over into the mainstream now where metal is now a fashion statement that someone wearing a metal t-shirt is just, you know, you can see them at all walks of life and famous people are now wearing that. It's cool. It's cool to be in metal. If you want to...
So metal is definitely having a resurgence. I mean, even here, I can see I've got three teenagers running around, and if you just went back 5-10 years, they'd all be listening to horrible, horrible pop music or stuff like that. But my kids have always been listening to metal, but now some of their friends are as well, and you see them in their metal t-shirts, and I'm sure Stranger Things has helped push that along. But it's become more mainstream. We're getting back to metal again. We've got this huge metal festival in Denmark. It's called Copenhagen, where it's in Copenhagen, of course. So Copenhagen for 3 or 4 days, they've got some huge names there. Last year it was Judas Priest, for example, and lots of good stuff. I tried to get tickets for that. That's this summer, at the end of the summer. I tried to get tickets for that like 5 months ago, and it was sold out already.
Wow.
So it's really becoming popular again.
You guys were there when it wasn't cool.
Yeah, it used to be in the 90s. Yeah, it wasn't so cool to be into
pre-Stranger Things.
It's like being a video game around that time. Yeah. It's like if you watch the film, a Hollywood film, and they showed a hacker doing that, that was like the best they could show is what the video game world was like. You know, and it's just
people
like
playing Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. Heroes playing Dungeons and Dragons. What?
Yeah, wow, I was talking to my kids about that because they watch these American shows with murderers and stuff, and they always say that if somebody's playing video games or role playing games or listening to heavy metal, that guy is going to be the murderer.
Yeah,
that's how it's portrayed in like 90s and then in early 2000s TV shows.
yeah, it's great though, isn't it? Because I mean that was, you know, and it's still. I still hate it when you hear the news reports, you know, something bad's happened. And one of the first things they say is known for spending a lot of time playing Call of Duty or some kind of nonsense like that, you know, and you just think, really, you know, have we not moved beyond that now? You know, linking tragic.
It's the dark turn alert, ladies and gentlemen, where the other disappointing thing that video games and metal have in common is they both use the scapegoats for the ills of society.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
Like, oh, this video game made this person do that. No, it didn't. In the same way that a song doesn't make someone do that. But we lived through the GTA days and it was ridiculous. And it's the same way metal had its time as well. You know, Judas Priest were put on trial for apparently, you know, devil worshipping and
secret. Yeah, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
And it's ridiculous, yeah. So we've had similar enemies. You know, I'm surprised there are not more metal. Well, there is actually, like I say, Doom's a good example of where metal and video games are starting to become good friends, because they do share an awful lot of commonalities, awful lot of them. You know, and when it's done, like we talk about it being funny, but when it's done with something like Doom, that's straight up. You know, it's played for as a really shocking video game, or it was. You know, and metal was brought in like that. Now, you know, even the sounds and stuff that go on in Resident Evil are played off from that, dissonant sounds and things that are meant to upset you and stuff like that. It's the same reason we listen to Sabbath's, you know, Black Sabbath, because it was meant to scare you. Yeah. So there's a lot of commonalities with video games that I think you'll start to see a bit more of. I think that it'll happen a lot more often, you know, certainly with like first-person shooters that want to show something crazy happening, they'll pump up the guitar, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely seems as if the games are not as afraid anymore of using really heavy metal for the soundtracks, where they would be more go for the more electronic sound earlier on, right? Apart from, of course, even Quake with the Trent Reznor did the soundtrack for Quake, which was a brilliant soundtrack. But again, that wasn't as heavy as the stuff they put into Doom today, for example.
Like a Mick Gordon score for Doom, which is pretty bleak stuff. A word on Peter McConnell's original score, which I thought was brilliant. You know, I was actually listening to a bit of it today on managed to find a YouTube playlist. One of my favorite little pieces of music in the game is the one where you uncover the landmarks and you get that little jingle, only lasts about 10 seconds. But I love that little kind of guitar kind of.
Those incidental bits were done by, in a very rare moment that they don't normally do this, were done by the two guitar players in Judas Priest.
Were they really? Downing,
and Glenn Tipton. And they never do. I don't think they've ever done any much soundtrack work or anything like that. But obviously, you know, Rob Halford does two voices, so he was very much invested in this.
He
must have said, you know, come along and do those kind of stings. Wow. In it. Like they play those things, which is incredible. They never
Peter
do
Peter McConnell
like
must have been beside himself, mustn't he? Like there's little jingles that he'd written being played by the guitarist from Judas Priest. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. But it's a great score though, you know, and as much as we, you know, we laud the license stuff, which is brilliant in this game. Yeah, Peter McConnell puts in another absolute banger of a soundtrack, I think.
It really suits it. He really understands, like, knows when to step in and when to leave the music playing for the songs. That's a real art, that, you know.
Yeah.
You almost feel sorry for him a little bit because of the license stuff is so
That's so true.
Good, it kind of gets lost a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, just write something as good as Painkiller. Give me 2 minutes. Yeah. No problem. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'll do that right away. There was a wonderful story that I didn't connect the dots until I was doing some research for this, where, you know, the Black Tears and the whole kind of thing with that?
Yeah.
I didn't connect it at first until I realised that a couple of years ago I'd seen this. When Tenacious D, that's Jack Black's band, when they were touring New Zealand and Australia, they were going around town pre-show and, you know, eating food and seeing the sights. And there was two kids playing metal, two young kids, like young teenagers playing metal, busking in the street. And that night he got them on stage at the arena to play with them. And no that way. Band's name was Black Tear.
Oh, wow. Like,
that's so sweet that that was put in there. That's so sweet.
Yeah, it can't be a coincidence, can it?
Yeah, it can't. No, it most definitely isn't. Most definitely isn't. But I thought it was so sweet.
What nice. A shame that we'll never see a sequel. You know, imagine what a sequel could look like now with, you know, with a better game and another 107 songs put in there. And
I just love that aesthetic that they built there. It's the beauty of a world to drive through. I still turn it on and just drive around and see if I can find some side missions that I haven't finished yet. It's a joy to play.
Does Tim Schafer do many remasters? He's obviously done, you know, the obvious ones, but
I mean, apart from the three old adventure games, I don't think so. No,
I don't think he does. That's a shame because it feels like he could maybe do it. Maybe just, you know, turn up some of the elements of it, and, you know, it seems like it could be done. I think it'd be, especially this point in history. I think with what's going on, I think that if someone said to me they're going to do a sequel of that now, I'd probably get that again.
Yeah,
I think they'd have to go over again.
I'm not sure the game holds up well enough for it to be remastered. I mean, it is back compat, isn't it? So you guys played it on Series X?
Yeah, I played it on Series X.
Played it on the PS3.
Yeah, I played it on the 360. But I know, so the fact that it's back compat, I think, is probably as close as we're going to get. I mean, I think you know, I would love to see a remake. You know, we're not. I'm not as down on remakes as Mads is, but this is a game though, which I think, you know, would be a really good remake because I think they could probably fix some of the issues with the gameplay.
Some quality of life stuff in there.
Keep all the music, keep all the world, obviously spruce it up.
I think that would be the problem though, wouldn't it? Would you be able to keep the music?
The licensing deals will have expired. Most likely.
And a lot of the time the licensing deals are one and done.
So Yeah, and then it'd be really expensive to get them again. And then, you know, it was tricky enough to find a publisher to put it out the first time that I suspect, you know, unless they were going to self-publish, which would be expensive. You've probably got it. Yeah, I think, you know, as we said last week, I can't ever see a sequel. I can't ever see a remake. I think the best we're going to get is that it's playable on modern consoles. And, you know, and let's hope that it is forever that, because even though, you know, we've said it's not the best video game in the world, it's a 10 out of 10, 6 out of 10. I think for people who love the genre, clearly, like you guys, Cooper, Mads, you know, there's always going to be so much there just to fire it up every now and again, drive around, look at the imagery and then turn it off again.
Yeah,
definitely. So guys, we've been going long. We need to finish it up, but Coop, I'm going to put you on a spot here. If you can you give me one track that you think should have been there? Can you choose just one that's missing and just
is... That is massive. The answer I would normally give would be The Sentinel by Judas Priest. It's the best Judas Priest song, and it seemed like it would have fitted perfectly, and they didn't use it. But for me, it's probably, believe it or not, it's probably Motor Breath off Kill 'Em All by Metallica. It just feels like that should have been one of the driving songs. Or maybe The Four Horsemen. I'll play it safe and say The Four Horsemen. That should have been in that as one of the driving songs.
Mate, you've had three. Like, that's three. You only allowed one.
There's too many. If I put on the spot, The Four Horsemen by Metallica should have been a driving song. The end. It should have been.
Final answer.
Yeah. Good answer.
Do you know what I'd have, Mads?
Yes.
Firework by Katy Perry.
Of course. Yeah, you would.
Yeah. I've got it just so we can. I managed to dig them out while I was just while I was doing. These are poor podcasting, but these are the plectrums. That's one side of them. That says Motorhead England for maybe those.
Yeah, it looks like my T-shirt.
But then the other one, when you work with them, looks like this. So let's just quickly show. That's the Motorhead. But on the back, it says, if you can pick that out, it says, you are the local road crew.
Oh, wow. That's amazing, mate. Never lose that. That is a slice of history, that.
Cool,
yeah. Amazing. Well, it was good fun. I enjoyed that. And I feel like, again, you know, I don't know about you, Jim, but... You know, I don't feel like it'll ever be a genre of music that I'm ever in love with like these guys. But I do feel like over the past few weeks, I've certainly got a greater appreciation for it.
100%. And like I say, it's got me looking at other bands and everything on Spotify, which can only be a good thing, can't
move
it?
Into your pirate
this
network.
Was most definitely meant to be a gateway drug for you guys to start listening to some proper music. Yeah. So we will... We'll give you some suggestions and slowly build you up all the way to Goat Semen. And
well, I feel like I don't know whether I'll ever get to Goat Semen, but I've definitely discovered Black Sabbath really through it and Ozzy Osbourne, and it is reawakened, you know, the kind of Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple bug in me. I've been listening to loads of that over the past few weeks, so. Yeah, you know, if nothing else, if we take nothing else away from the game, you know, an average gameplay experience, but certainly. Yeah, an incredible musical experience.
Yeah,
incredible musical and visual experience. I mean, maybe that visual experience was had more of an impact for Coop and I, because those are the album covers we used to look at when we were teenagers in a game. I mean, it's
those huge landscapes that we saw when you drive in.
Yes, and the piles of skulls and the big monsters and the spikes and the chrome and everything. It's it's part of my childhood, part of my when I was young. So it's seeing that brought to life is a huge deal as well for me. And that probably doesn't have the same impact on you guys, of course. But that and the music means that this game is perfect. Gameplay aside, it is a perfect game.
Yeah, it's like when you see you know, Kim Kardashian and Justin Bieber wearing Metallica shirts. I think that's great because it means that we slowly win off. One of those comes over to our side. So Jim and Chris, you are Kim and Justin, and you are we've won. If you go away and listen to some of this, then we've won, and I'm a happy man.
Jim, which one are you, Justin, Chris? Doesn't have enough hair. My butt's as big as Kim.
Great stuff. Mm-hmm.
And with those words, let's say goodbye for this time. Anybody got any shout-outs? I like to, of course, thank Coop for coming on. Coop is the host of the Spoken Metal Show, so if you want to hear him talk about metal even more, go check that out on your podcast feed, of course, the Spoken Metal Show. And apart from that, I don't think I have any shout-outs. Any, you guys, Chris, any shout-outs you need to
get off your chest? I just want to say big thanks to Mark for coming on, Coop. And, only for coming on and shout-out to his podcast, but also a massive member of our community as well, and the Retro Asylum community. And we appreciate your support over the years, mate. And this has been great fun. I knew it would be. And I'm really glad that we did it. So, yeah, thank you to you, Mark. Big shout-out to Andy. And... all of our Discord members and listeners.
Yeah, I'll second that. And again, thanks, Mark. We said off air, I've wanted an education. So I came for an education.
Certainly got one of them.
Definitely got that, yeah. So thank you.
Sorry about that.
No, thanks. Brilliant.
Coop, you get the final words. This has been a long journey. I think you and I talked about doing this episode like 2 years ago, maybe even more. Finally, we're here, and you get the final words of the episode.
Oh, thank you. Well, listen, Luke, this ain't free, by the way. The prerequisite while everybody's on it is that I'm going to get Mads on my show. We're going to talk video games and metal on my show. So that's the
payment
that I
must... him to sing?
that one from John V put a song up, didn't he?
Yeah, John V wants you to sing, Mads.
I said to John V that we need to. I was the temptation to do a metal version, and it still remains the temptation to do a metal version. That is enormous. So maybe we shall do that. Gents, I will say on behalf of all the Discord community, this is one of the most welcoming and nicest places to be on podcasts to listen to and be involved with. And we're all involved with other Discord channels and stuff like that that maybe aren't as good. This is a really nice place to be, and it's a really well-run thing. And everybody, I'm just echoing that I know what the other guys think, and it's brought a lot of people together. Me and Mads would have never have met, and we've got a really great relationship talking about metal and that type of stuff. And some of the people that have met through this is fantastic, and you guys are doing great work. You know, you really are. This is one of the best podcasts that I listen to. So I'm very grateful that I'm even allowed a moment on it. So I apologize to everybody listening who is now sick of my voice, but you can listen to more of me if you like. But thanks again, gents. It's been a real pleasure and continues to be a pleasure to be a part of the playthrough and Retro Asylum as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. Yeah.
Thank you, mate.
Thanks. Yeah.
And with those words, yep. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Mr. Crowley, what went on in your head?